This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Yak Gadget. For all your kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Pelican cases, coolers, and lighting, go to pelican.com. The 153 Bait Company. For all your hard and soft bait needs, go to the 153anglers.com. Now let's get this show started.
What's going on? Facebook Live, YouTube, welcome back. Another exciting episode this evening. Mr. Randall?
Sir?
Look at him. He's already dropping links in the chat. He's on his game tonight, boys and girls. I like it. For those of you tuning in the podcast world after the stream ends, welcome, as always. Got an exciting show for you guys. We got Nicholas Beltran in the house already. So, boys? What's up, brother? Hope you're well down there in Florida. Got an exciting episode tonight. Talking with the boys from the north. Oh, Canada. Right? Is that how that goes?
Yeah. Sounded great.
They're both down there laughing their asses off. I like it. From Punisher Waterfowl, I had the privilege of being on their podcast recently, and I was like, just had a ton of fun talking with those guys. So we figured we'd get them on our show as well and talk a little bit about podcasting, waterfowl hunting out of a kayak, all kinds of good stuff. So we're going to chat with them. We got any news tonight? I don't think so.
No.
I know Noobs Championship is coming up. Our Noobs tournament that we do every month just winded down. End of September, so we got the championship. I know Susie Roloff has been working on getting that on Tourney X, which I believe is up now. So if you guys are watching on the Noobs group, that is up now. Or if you're listening on the podcast, get signed up. If you took first place for a month in the Noobs tournaments, that championship is going to be in October. You'll have one day out of a 10-day span to pick your day to fish, and your best five fish for that day go towards it. Top two places will get paid.
Good job.
Yep. KBF National Championship is coming up as well. Good luck to all those guys competing next week down there. I know Drew Gregory yep. is going to be fishing that.
Him and Ken.
Ken Morris. Yeah, yep. They're on the motor guide team.
Yes, sir.
So good luck to everybody down there fishing. But let's get this party started, man. Let's get these wonderful, beautiful Canadian brotherhood in the house. We got Damien up in the right-hand corner and Mr. Dave Palmer down below. What's up, fellas?
Hey, not much. How's it going?
You like my old Canada?
You know what? It was a lot better than I can sing it. So
it brought a tear to my eye. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie, buddy.
Oh, man. Love it. Love it. Well, welcome to the show, man. Super excited to have you guys on tonight. I had a ton of fun talking with you guys over on your podcast. So we wanted to show you guys some love. And, you know, we got some hunters that tune into our show because it seems like I was thinking about this today. Like, it seems like come fall, we like start to transition in like more hunting podcasts. And then come spring, we transfer back over into that fishing stuff.
We're more the chameleon podcast of the team.
Yeah, of the whole network. Yeah.
It's like we just do it like that. That's what we want to do. So we're doing it.
So, but why don't you guys give us a little background on yourselves, man, where you guys are from up north and, you know, kind of how your guys' podcast kind of got started.
Go for it, Dave.
Yeah, so
Damien just threw you under the bus, it sounds
big
like.
Big time.
Yeah, that's okay. So we're both from Ontario, Canada, but like when we say we're from Ontario, Damien and I are from opposite sides of Ontario here. Like it takes me 6 hours to drive just to get to Damien's house. So, but yeah, Damien and I, we have this business together called Punisher Waterfowl. And then we were just throwing snowballing ideas and Damien said, you know, we should do a podcast and there's no waterfowl podcast up here. And we're like, yeah, sure. And, you know, we got a group of our friends together and just, it started out just something like, we're just five guys that don't know anything about technology trying to put something together. And then it's kind of evolved into, we started like just getting our friends to come on and we're goofing around and talking and trying to educate people and show people the funner side of waterfowling. And then it kept evolving and we started getting on some of these industry experts and now we're kind of still evolving and we're learning, you know, all the technological side of it and how to edit videos and take out certain sections. And it's been a fun experience that we're hoping some of the listeners are actually learning from and getting something out of. And we're also talking about some of the hard topics, like what not to do, what pictures not to take, and, you know, things that people maybe wouldn't have thought about in their normal everyday. Like it would just, look at what I did. I shot this bird and this is what it looked like after. Well, you know, that's drawing negative attention. So let's start trying to draw more positive stuff. So it kind of grew from there. So,
all right. So with that being said, I got to ask you, cause I've been posting some duck pictures. Are those okay?
Yeah. It's good. You got to be proud of your harvest and, you know, but for example, this weekend was it Wednesday or Tuesday?
Yeah.
I was out hunting and the first widgeon I'd ever seen up here when I was kayak hunting, I was like, shot it. And I was so happy and I'm running out and go to pick it up and its head was missing. Well, now I can't post that picture. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
So it's just one of those things that we don't want that stuff to come being posted, but the nice pictures and some of the stuff we've learned from other people that have been on, like, they'll carry wet wipes in their bag. And when they go to take the picture, they'll wipe the blood off to make the picture look a little bit better and shine up that beak a little bit, you know? And
sure.
So, or the bill, sorry, but like it's just certain stuff like that.
Yeah. It's the same way in like the deer hunting world. I know, like I got into deer hunting late, like, you know, my dad hunted a little bit like upland style stuff, shot a lot of trap and skeet back before I was born. And, you know, I never really had anybody to show me hunting until a good friend of mine did. And that was in like my late 20s. And I started doing some research and stuff. And there's I'm going to shout it out. It's bowhunting.com. They do a web show. It's on Roku and Amazon Prime and all that stuff. But I remember they had a forum still, and this was like 2010 or something. And that was a huge topic, right? Like taking pictures of deer and like trying to clean them up, make them presentable. So that way you're not, you know, agitating a bunch of those, you know, quote unquote anti-hunters and things like that, man. I mean, it, and not only that, but it makes your harvest look that much better, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But I mean, but let's not like pretend that nobody knows like how that hamburger gets on bun or that chicken gets into their freezer. You know what I mean? It's they just don't want to see all the bad stuff, right? Yeah. Or what they would consider. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's, I understand completely. I mean, I picture my deer, right? I didn't want to really even put it up because it's got like a little bit of a bloody hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, or even like the meat that we were dealing with. I was like, I can't put that up either.
Yeah.
You know, just because like I don't want to deal with the, you know, or have, you know, the podcast have to deal with some kind of a backlash from it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the world we live in right now, right? Like, it's funny that you said that, but that's the world we live in now, that a picture that you post up, it takes one person to mm-hmm. not like it, and they're writing emails and they're screenshotting and sending messages and stuff, and it just spirals and it just snowballs from there, right? So, you know, Dave.
And it's kind of like we were talking about the other day where like businesses, right? You'll have 1,000 people that have a great experience or 1,000 people like your podcast, but it's that one person that doesn't, that's going to speak up, and they're going to be the loudest voice because they're the only one talking. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like that one saying, like, you make one person mad, they'll tell 100, you make one person happy, they might tell 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Isn't interesting though, like how it's become taboo, and it's like the cornerstone of both of our continents, but both of our countries, you know, backgrounds. I mean, especially in Canada. Mm-hmm. I mean, hunting is, you know, I mean, everybody is taught that.
You know, I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast with Steve Ranella today.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Steve.
And Meat Eater, and he was saying, because they were talking about what's a big national park in Montana and Wyoming?
Yosemite.
Yosemite. Is it Yosemite?
I don't know.
I don't know. Either way.
Don't look at us.
Yeah. He was talking about that. And he said, you know, when he retires, he wants to make it his life's work to make that a wildlife. I forget the proper terminology. But to open it for hunting, right? It draws mm-hmm. a lot of tourism and stuff, and there's no hunting allowed. But he said that particular area of the United States has been hunted for over 9,000 years, with the exception of the past 100 since mm-hmm. it was turned into this national park.
Do you guys remember a couple years ago, there was I don't know who it was, but some government agency down in the States. Anyways, they had tracked some wolves. They had reintroduced the wolf.
Yep.
And that was in Yosemite, right?
Yep. Yep. That's the same
part. Yosemite's in California.
Yeah. Yosemite's California. It's right there. It's on the southern part of the state right there. It's in that corner.
But
it's so
funny. Yellowstone.
There we go. You guys are talking about national parks, and I'm thinking of that TV show.
It's important to really let everybody know that we're from Illinois, and we don't go out west.
And we're from Canada, and mm-hmm. we don't. Yeah. So that park, they had to reintroduce wolves to sort of bring the balance back. Because things were going all out of whack, and that's what it was. It's not being hunted.
Yeah.
So after years and years of it, managing the populations, right?
That was one of the points he brought back. You know, they reintroduced wolves to kind of balance out the ecosystem, but that was the point he was trying to make, that he got into that 9,000 years of hunting was the one predator that they haven't allowed back in there is mm-hmm. humans.
Yeah.
You know, so it made a lot of sense. So,
but even like, what is it like, even out there though, did Mark have, with the reintroduction of the wolves, like, haven't they been kind of like ravaging, and now they've got to like open it up?
Yeah. Now they've opened up seasons on the wolves because they were supposed to control the herds, or the way it was proposed was the herds were supposed to be controlled. And now they've opened up seasons on them to kind of control those populations, because now they've spread obviously outside of the park and they're getting up into parts of Montana, Idaho, down to Colorado, things like that. So they're spreading out because they did the same thing in northern Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're seeing them start to work their way south. They're definitely in the UP and things like that.
Minnesota.
But, yeah, right. Minnesota as well. Yeah, I know Minnesota's got them pretty good. And then obviously you guys up north got wolves everywhere, right?
Oh yeah, they're walking down the streets all the time, man.
Yeah. They come right past our igloos.
We shop at the same stores.
Yeah. When we're kids, we ride them.
There you go.
No, just like we were saying, like Ontario is so big. I got to drive like 3 hours to get where wolves would be, right? Yeah. Like it's they're pretty far north of me.
Are they? So, all right, gotcha. I didn't know there are wolves. Like out by like Saskatchewan and all that stuff, they're pretty prevalent, though. I thought.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I know in like northern Ontario, and then some of the areas like provincial parks.
Okay.
They have a fairly good population just because there's no hunting, right?
Right.
So they're able to come in. There's moose and deer. So there's lots for them to eat. But I personally, I've never seen one, and I'm originally from Newfoundland, and there's no wolves in Newfoundland, so that the early settlers eradicated them first when they came in. So there's no wolves in Newfoundland. That's why the moose population is so high in Newfoundland, because there's no natural predator for the moose in Newfoundland.
Well, I know, you know, that's kind of why they got eradicated out in the West, is because they were trying to get the buffalo herds bigger. You know, you're going back to Native Americans, you know, they wanted to eradicate the wolves because they learned that the wolves were taking out the buffaloes and, you know, this and that, and the elk and things like that. So, you know, they were trying to preserve their food sources, so to speak. So that's initially why a lot of them were eradicated. But we didn't have to go down this rabbit hole, man.
I was just getting ready to say, hey, can we start talking about some ducks here?
Yeah, so let's talk about some ducks, man. So
it's kind of a bummer. I was looking at more bad geographical positioning.
Well, hey, so let's get this out of the way here right now. So a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we had I wasn't on the show. But we had a good friend of ours from Northern California, Bird Dog Waterfowl, come on. And, you know, he's given us sort of kind of this geography lesson of where he is and stuff. And I don't think any of us fully realize how big the state of California is.
Oh, yeah.
But then, huge. Yeah. But then Dave gets on and starts talking about how it borders. Was it Texas, you said, Dave? California borders.
I was trying to talk about like the climate. I was like, you've got climate like the southern part of Canada is further south than the northern part of California or whatever, and then the southern part is like the same border as Texas, and it might have came out that it's right beside Texas. And,
what kind of geography are they teaching you boys up north?
Yeah. Is your guys' map broke? You know, they have like different globes. Like, this is my flat globe.
Yeah.
That's called a map. Well,
it's called metric. It's metric up here, okay, fellas. It's all different. It's all different. Plank. It's all different. We're metric.
That's funny. That is too funny, man. So, I mean, how did you guys both get into waterfowl? Damien, why don't you go first, man? Like, what got you in waterfowl hunting?
Well, you know, for the listeners that don't know where I'm from, the province I'm from, it's an island off the east coast of Canada. So, you know, my hometown is 300 people max. So as a teenager, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to do, but, you know, all our dads had shotguns and you know, it was something to do. But it wasn't waterfowl hunting in its truest sense, because we literally just walked around with a shotgun over our shoulder and hoped that we could, you know, jump shoot some birds. It wasn't until I moved to Ontario that I actually started hanging out with fellas and actually, you know, learning how to pattern these birds and all the work that goes into them. So I've been doing it ever since I've been, you know, 12, 13 years old. But I would say it's only been the last 20 years that I've actually been taught, you know what okay. I mean? So the first 10 years, I was just roaming around, really.
Right on.
How about you, Dave? Yeah.
So for me, I think it's kind of like I have two separate starting points. Like the first starting point, I was 21 years old, just starting the family, starting the career and all that stuff out of college, and moved back home. So I start hunting, and I got into everything, like trying deer hunting, trying, you know, turkey hunting, waterfowl hunting. And I just kind of dabbled in everything. And then I did that for a bunch of years. And I guess it was 2017, the first Punisher waterfowl camp we hosted. And I went out and I met some of my best friends, like the guy, some of the guys that I call brothers now, I met there. And we're talking 4 or 5 years ago. And it just became an addiction from then. Like it just snowballed into like, that's all I wanted to do. And, you know, it used to be turkeys, like can't wait for the spring. And now it's like, turkey season, whatever. I'll go out and get a bird, but I can't wait till the fall, because then all these guys that I met at our first camp, I get to go see them again. We get to hunt, and the excitement of like the really good hunts. And so kind of my big starting point would have been our first camp. That's what got me right fully into it.
Nice. I like it, man. That's cool. That's cool.
But the cool thing, I want to jump in. So that first camp, Dave wasn't part of the company on the very first one. So that's the really, really cool thing with Dave's story, was that Dave wasn't part of the company. Him and I just talked over Facebook, over Messenger, and just got to know one another. And I was hosting this first camp and he came out, and then, you know, we pretty much high-fived and said, I think we became best friends, and the rest is history. Do you know what I mean? But that's the really cool thing about it is that this community, it's soaking people in, and it's, you know, without sounding too silly, but like you're soaking people in, you're wrapping your arms around them, the good people, and you're trying to keep them and make sure that they're doing that positive influence, right?
Yeah, no, it's a lot like the kayak fishing community, man. Like that's exactly the same way that all works, man. So we can relate 100% to that, which is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
But like the company itself, man, like, so what is all behind Punisher Waterfowl?
So
Damien, this one's you.
Yeah, this one's it. So I'm 20 years. I done 20 years in the Canadian military, retired in 2019. So in 2014, I got posted back to Ontario. I was out on the East Coast for a few years, and I got posted back to Ontario, and my buddy and I, we couldn't find anybody that would go hunting with us. And we couldn't find any locals that would let us come hunt their property. So as a joke, I created a Facebook page. I paid some dude in Indonesia to make me a logo. He made me a logo. I put it up on Facebook and I said, I'm Punisher Waterfowl. And that's literally what I done. And then all of these fellas started saying, hey, why don't you come out and hunt with us? You should come out and hunt. You make sure you bring your camera and you snap all kinds of pictures and you put it up on social media. And I'm like, yeah, sure. 100%. I'll come and hang out. So that went on for a little bit. And then these fellas started getting wise to me and they were like, so what is it you actually do? And I'm like, yikes. I guess I better come up with something because the jig is up. So then I just start slapping the logo on everything, like stickers, hats, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it. I was slapping the logo on it and people were buying it. And I thought, I was like, okay, well, this is cool. So then I tried, I got into selling some stuff from a company, out of the States. They were awesome to work with. But it was hard, right? Like you're trying to compete with the big box stores and all this, right? So it just wasn't feasible. Then I shifted. I started making my own stuff, making my own decoy bags and all kinds of that stuff. And it was good, but you're trying to compete with Asia and the big box stores and it just wasn't working. And then I had a little bit of health issues. So took a little bit of a break there for a year. And then that's about the time that Dave came on. And I reached out to Dave and I asked him if it was something that he'd be interested in doing. I was in Iraq at the time. I was in Iraq. So that was 2016. Oh, wow. I was in Iraq at the time. And I asked Dave, I said, listen, man, what do you think? And he said, well, let me think about it. Come back from Iraq and Dave joined up and we've been constantly changing ever since. Like we're always adding something new or trying something new, just to make our own mark onto the waterfowl community. Right. And that's really what we're trying to do. And up here in Canada, like down in the States, there's a million guys like us. Up here in Canada, not so much, right? So, that's really how the company started. And now we're doing our own podcast, which has been, you know, really humbling, a lot of fun, and we've got to meet some pretty amazing people, our guests. So, and now we're just, you know, we're along for now. We're coasting now. Like we're still putting in the work, but we're really enjoying ourselves is what we're doing right now.
Heck yeah, man. Cool. I just dropped the link to where you guys can go order some t-shirts and hats and stuff that these guys offer, man.
Yeah. Thanks. No, yeah. Buy up all kinds of stuff, everybody. Just
and while you're there, like, so a big thing with Punisher is we'd like to try and give back and help the community out. Right now on the website, there's a t-shirt there, Troy Blackwell from Top Notch Paracord. Every year we try and do a scholarship called, but we try and give money to one of the students. And what we do is we design a shirt in conjunction with them, and all the proceeds from that shirt go 100% directly to that student. So, if you want to support a local kid there's a shirt on there from Top Notch Paracord. He did a good job and good kid. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Your guys' logo is cool.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah. It's cool. I dig it.
Is it the one with the lanyard on the back?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's the one.
All right. I'm going to put this up on the screen because this is badass. I was just looking at it.
18 year old kid, man. 18 year old kid. 18 year old kid, started his own, you know, lanyard making company. And now he's a student, at college here doing, fish and wildlife. I think that's what it's called. Hey, Dave, fish and wildlife.
I think so. And he's, so he sits there and in his spare time, he sits there making lanyards and, using that money to pay for his schooling. He had a little incident, stepped on a nail or something during the first week of hunting season. And he sent me a picture of him like in the hospital waiting to get his foot looked at, and he's tying paracord lanyards just to make money for schooling. So it's like, yeah,
it's that's a cool,
neat story, man. For that kid.
Yeah. That's cool. Heck yeah, man. That's awesome. I like that, dude.
It's kind of funny how like some of the more successful, you know, like mom and pop or like, you know, entrepreneurs, whatever, start off as an accident.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and then it just progresses. You know, and I think, like I said, I like that circle logo, dude. Is
yeah, with the duck.
It has a great look.
I know.
Thanks, like man.
Only badasses can wear that, so you can't order one. Sorry,
I'd be a poser, just like I haven't even shot a duck yet. You know,
buddy, gotta get out and start shooting some ducks.
So that's a great question, right? Let's use our good friend Jay here is our decoy, so to speak. Best advice for a guy that wants to get into waterfowl hunting?
Come to a Punisher waterfowl camp.
Yeah.
There you go. You go to Canada.
Just come up to Canada, man. Like
you can actually make it up here. We can't come down to you, but come on up. We'll enjoy that.
How much
stuff
is that?
Would they even let us cross the border now?
Yeah.
You guys can cross.
People from the U.S. can cross the border, but Canadians cannot cross the border in America.
Yeah.
How messed up is that?
That's a whole nother conversation.
I'm pissed off, man. Yeah. I was going to make Dave paddle out to get all my birds I shoot this year.
Well, we had this very same talk, like back when it was like when the border was a little more strict and we were talking about going up to the boundary waters. And
we
were warned, like, if you guys go up there, they're like, do not cross the border line. On the water. Yeah. They're like, you will be detained. And I'm like, and it's like, and they don't have to give you back to the States. So.
I don't think that would be a bad thing, though, being stuck in Canada. Like, sorry, boss, you can't come home.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, as of recent, like, I mean, or not recent, but like in years past, I thought all Canadians were nice, and they're not. Like, so I'm pretty sure there's some pretty mean ones out there that would be Oh.
we've got our assholes, too. Don't worry.
Yeah. They'd be like, USA, eh? You know? How do you like those that Canadian steel? You look good behind those bars? You
know? No, but like, Jay, seriously, man, like, the first step is just get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First step.
I don't want to say I haven't gone duck hunting because I have. I've done more of the traditional kind. I belong to a club and I have a mentor there too. You know, I got a couple shots off and, you know, I learned how to miss birds pretty good. But I also learned a lot
how to buy shells.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I learned a lot from it, but I mean, I've been out there and stuff, but you know, the whole kayak situation and like, and even without a kayak, just wading, which is different. Mine's more of like the Cadillac style, I guess you could call it with the people I go with. But it's more intimate, you know, there's a little more work involved. I don't know. I think it's a more of a controlled situation. It's not so commercial.
Yeah,
I guess, you know, but I mean, it's and I do want to get out more. There was just so much going on with deer hunting and that. It's like I kind of had to, like, in my mind, just pick one.
Put it in the mix, bro.
Yeah. Huh?
You need to put it in the mix.
I know. I mean, but we got time this year, and I got Brad and I got Brian. So, like, they're good people to lean on to do on the kayak side, you know, just to kind of get, just to get more of an experience, you know, in the middle of it. Because, again, it's like I'm with older guys with boats and stuff like that, and they're not, you know, it's a different way of hunting.
Yeah.
But, you know? But that's the thing. Like, a lot of deer hunters I find, I'll take them out duck hunting and I'll take them out a few times and the first time they're going to miss every single bird and it's going to be fun and whatever it is, but they'll keep coming back and want, and then eventually it's just like, man, why am I deer hunting? This is wicked. Right.
It's true. It's true. Well, you got to think about it, right? Like you're going to see a lot more action waterfowl hunting than you will deer hunting. Granted, a deer, bigger animal,
bigger yield, right? You know,
I wouldn't necessarily a little bit harder to harvest a deer versus some ducks, but you still got to put in the work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like
it's the same thing, like, you know, deer scouting, waterfowl scouting, you still got to put in that homework to make your hunt successful. But you know, when them birds come flying in and they're starting to work them decoys, man, there's something cool about it.
Oh yeah.
Then they come into land and then you pop up and you're just like, wah, wah, wah,
wah. Yeah. I remember like we had a wood duck come in and I remember the guy I was with, he's like, nope. You know, just because like, he's like, nope, new guy. You know, he's like, so I'm like, no. And he's like, nope.
You know? The thing about waterfowl hunting and for anybody that hasn't done it and especially for the diehard deer hunters, waterfowl hunting is such a social hunt.
Sure. Like
you can be, you know, you could be smoking, smoking and joking, chatting, you know, sitting next to one another, having a good time. You got your dog, your best friend right there with you. And when you see the birds, that's when you shut up and you don't move. You know, deer hunter, you know, the amount of effort that a deer hunter has to put in to make sure he's hidden and there's no scent. You know, like that's just an insane amount of work. You know, I think you got to do it alone.
You kind of hit it on the head there, man. Like that's one thing I've really enjoyed about, you know, waterfowl hunting recently with Brad, you know, just sitting in the boat, you know, middle of the woods, you're watching or middle of the lake or marsh or wherever you're at, you know, watching everything come alive. And then, you know, you don't have to be quiet. Nope. Ducks don't like freak out over, you know, you guys talking or whatever. And, you know, Brad's giving me a hard time. Letterkenny references are coming out. Smoking another dark guy.
You know, like, you know, so it's fun, man. It's like you said, it's that social hunting, you know. It's kind of like when, you know, I took Jay pheasant hunting last year and we had a good time, you know, we're talking. It's the same kind of concept, you know, except you don't have to do a ton of hiking. So you might like
what? Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I don't like being the dog. I'm too fat to be a dog.
So, you know, it's definitely different, man. It's definitely different. What would be the top mistake you guys would say that you see like a new waterfowl hunter make? Damien's like, I got a whole list. How long
you got? My first one, and Dave will probably have one as well, but my first one is that I know you have a firearm in your hand and it shoots a bunch of projectiles out the end of it, but you got 35, 40 yards. That's your effective. So what I find is that there's people they're just inexperienced. They don't want to have the patience to let the birds work in closer to them. And they're just taking these super long shots and therefore either crippling the birds or totally missing them, which then educates the birds, right?
Sure.
That's what I think. And that's just experience. That's all that is. Once they get more experience, then they know, okay, well, listen, I can't hit a bird at 60 yards. I need to have a little bit more patience and let them work in a little bit closer. Dave?
But with that too, like there's a lot of people too that they'll see a flock of birds coming at them and they'll be like, oh, well, my shotgun shoots a whole bunch out and it spreads out. So they'll shoot right in the middle of the pack just to try and, you know, no, pick your bird and go after the one. Like that's, but no, my biggest one would be people not putting in the time scouting or scouting properly. They just think like, oh, there's water, I'm going to go hunt birds. Well, that's not how it works. You gotta find where the birds want to be at that time. And then on top of that, a lot of people don't understand that there's Troy there.
Craig Mintz
awesome. Too. Yeah. So a lot of people don't understand too, like when they're out scouting, especially if you're in like a marsh or something, if you go right deep into it without your binoculars and you scare the birds away, you might've scared your birds away. So like, scout from afar. But yeah, scouting's probably my biggest thing that people don't put enough time into and effort into.
Yeah, me and Damien were talking about that before we got started, you know. I mean, it's huge. You gotta scout, you know. It's the same thing, like, you know, we've talked about as far as deer hunting goes, or even fishing for that matter, you know, like, you know, guys are fishing tournaments. You're going out pre-fishing. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You're scouting for fish. You're scouting for deer. If you're sitting in a field that no deer come into, you're wasting your time, you know? And then guys are complaining that they're not shooting deer, you know, same kind of instance, you know? But I know what you're saying, Damien, because, and you can ask Brad this too, cause I'm like, can I shoot now? Was that a duck? Can I shoot now? You know, like that was like my first couple of sits with him. And he's like, just calm down, guy. Calm down. I'm like, I want to shoot a duck, you know? I think that's the thing too. Like new hunters, they get excited and then they just want to, you know, just fling lead or steel at the first thing that flies by. You know what I mean? And I get that. You know, it's exciting. It's exciting.
But to see what at the same time, and Dave and I say it a lot, like we're chasing a bird with a brain the size of a pea. And yet I'll sit here and say, you need to have patience. And then, you know, you're sitting, you're waiting for them to work. They're circling. You're waiting for them to work. And then they screw off. They're just like, yeah, not interested. And they fly off. And then you go, man, should have took that shot. Shouldn't have waited so long. Like they'll humble you every day.
Oh yeah.
So you think you got them figured out? They'll humble you 100%.
What I noticed too is, first of all, Damien, I agree with you on what you said about, like, you know, how far can you shoot from? Because I mean, I guess before I even got into it, even not really spending the time to, you know, before, like, the whole, you know, knowing what a, you know, a shotgun can do and what its effective range is, you know, you look up at geese and you're like, oh man, I mean, I know we're talking about ducks, but I'm just saying, like, you're like, geese, oh yeah, people probably popping shots at those. And it's like, they're, if not 1,000 yards away, they're probably further, you know? And you're like, you don't put it together. And then, you know, but I mean, it's funny, like, just coming into it as a rookie, like, so many things you realize. I mean, I noticed too, a lot of the guys have, like, those duck books, so they can, because I mean, there's some ducks you can't shoot.
Sure.
That's right. You need to be able to identify, like, immediately what you're looking at so you don't get in trouble. I mean, there was a guy who shot, like, a over by us, like, an endangered, I think it was another goose one, but, like, an endangered goose. It was the one you're not supposed to shoot, and he shot it.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and, of course, the DNR caught, you know, I mean, there's a whole ordeal, but there's this whole education that goes behind that to be able to identify, you know, and also use your yardage and, you know, I mean, and being able to lead them. And I mean, there's so much going on.
Yeah. That's like early teal season down here. Like, I went out by myself and I'm like, I just don't feel comfortable, man. I just kicked back and watched birds fly around, you know, I'm like, cause with my luck, I'm going to shoot a mallard or something like that. I mean, they kind of look similar, you know, obviously one smaller, but I'm like, dude, I'm not comfortable for this. I'm not that advanced. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to identify birds, and Dave's down here freaking laughing. I can tell. He's like, look at this kid.
I'm just laughing because, like, you Americans have, like, oh, early teal season, and here's this season. And us stupid Canadians, we just have duck season.
That's it.
Them are ducks.
Yeah. Welcome to America. We are overregulated.
You know? Dude, that's an interesting question, because me and Brad were talking about this just the other night on the phone. Do they limit your guys' duck season to 60 days?
No.
September 25th till January 7th.
It's deer season.
I'm freaking moving to Canada.
Dude, that's deer season.
I'm moving to Canada. So
yeah, and you'll find that too, like, find that too, like good buddy of ours, Jordan LeMay, down in New York there, he'll come across the border and hunt in Canada because it extends his season, right? It's
sure.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Cause they limited us to 60 days. I'm not sure if it's all states or just Wisconsin or what it is. So
I think most people we talk to, that's what they say. They have 60 days and they hunt hard for those 60 days.
Yeah. I think it's regulated by the federal wildlife agency or something.
And you got to remember too, that in the States, you guys have what, Dave, like 5 times, 6 times the amount of waterfowlers that we have.
Yeah. I was just going to say like the population is way more dense.
Yeah.
Isn't it here, like, 20 or 30% of the Canadian waterfowlers are Americans that come up here or something? Like, there's some big percentage of Canadians that come up.
20% of Canadian waterfowl stamps sold are sold to Americans that come up to hunt, right?
Those damn Americans.
Okay. Yeah.
I tell you, man.
I tell you, we're waiting to see how the pandemic is affecting this, right? So last fall, no Americans were able to come to Canada to hunt.
Yeah, that's a curious question I have too, because I know one of your guys' big economy is all the fishing lodges, the hunting, all that stuff. I mean, how detrimental has that been to that whole economy up there? I mean, it's got to be huge. We were talking about that earlier in the season, like all the fishing lodges up there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I know you guys count on that income from all these Americans that come up over the border for the great fishing in Canada.
Yeah. So I know, like our friend, one of our guys that come on that's one of the regular, hosts on our podcast with us, Ryan, he's a guide from out west.
Yeah.
So his guide, the outfitter that owns it, like, he just shut the doors. Because he just, like, his insurance alone, and the upkeep on the lodge, and then all the equipment and everything else, right? Like, he just, it was just easier to just shut the door. But then we seen a lot of other outfitters up here, which came to known as the Canadian prices, right? So they dropped the prices because they dropped the prices a little to try and entice Canadians to come out to these hunting lodges and fishing lodges more, right? But we don't know how well that worked yet, right? So we don't know. So we have a lot of questions. Like, I can tell you that out west, like Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta, like those three provinces were hurting because Americans weren't able to come up. And listen, like it's a big boost to the economy.
Oh, I bet. I mean, you got gas, food, you know, employment to the people working at these lodges. Absolutely. And everything like that, you know, the guides, you know, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, man, that I don't think a lot of people realize. And I mean, that the outdoors in general is just such a huge part of the Canadian economy.
Yeah.
Other than paper and logs, right?
Yeah, you know? And polar
bears. And ice.
Yeah.
Ice.
And Molson.
Molson, yeah. Yeah.
Molson. What, you know, a horrible
Labatt.
Beer.
Labatt.
Yeah, Labatt. You know, I wonder if there's going to be like a reverse effect too. Like, so yeah, I mean, the States got hit hard too with a lot of stuff. And I mean, you know, across the board, a lot of places they had to close the doors. But in that time, we noticed there's a lot more people on the water. There's a lot more people in the woods. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if that influx, like that, we'll just call that monkey wrench, is going to cause now an influx and now bring it back even heavier coming
than
forward.
Than it was before.
Like in the future. I mean, because, and see, out by, like, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but hunting is, like you talked about in the beginning, it's taboo, right? So it's kind of like a dying art. You know, I'll just call it an art, you know, on my side, but you know, it's just something that, you know, caught for years and then is slowly whittled, you know, or, you know, dwindled away just because of everything else, you know, with the way you know, technology and all that. But now with everything that happened, everybody went back into the forest, everybody went back on the water.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I think I heard too that like there was actually more hunting license definitely sold, more fishing license
fishing
definitely
and
sold.
Hunting license, I think across the board in the United States were up, I forget, it was like 30% or 25% or something like that, which is a huge significant boost. But not only that, but traffic to, you know, state parks and, you know, just anything outdoors related went up because you were told you couldn't be indoors with people. So people were getting outside. Like, and that's the thing too. Like, you look at the whole outdoor industries as a whole. I don't know what your guys' ammo situation is up there, but like down here, I had to go to four stores before I could find two boxes of 12 gauge 3-inch shells.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's been,
it's ridiculous.
It's but, better I mean, now.
It's, but... a, it's the same in the kayak world, right? Like, every kayak shop sold out of kayaks, or, you know, as soon as they get in, they're out the door. You know, fishing industry has just been crazy. And not only that, like these manufacturers are trying to keep up and there's just no way. The demand is so high and supply is low too.
Yeah. Like I said, I wonder if like with the ugly, are you going to get the good part of it now? You know, like, so all of those people who ended up having to close their doors, I wonder if they will have a chance to evolve and then capitalize on all the new hunters that are going to be coming in to the mix, you know, and everybody that's
going to be coming up to Canada. I certainly hope so. You know, especially these mom and pop, you know, fishing and hunting stores that's been in the neighborhood or in the town for, you know, three and four generations. It would be a shame that they had to shut down and remain shut down. So I know, and this is something that we fight here in Canada. I say fight, but that may be too bit of a strong word. But it's something that we're always, Dave and I are very we pay attention to it. Not that we're anti big box store, but we are very much support the local small business as much as we can, right? And and those are the people, like, we need to support these businesses, right? That's the thing. Like, there's nothing wrong with having an influx of new fishermen, fisher persons. That's our prime minister that came up with that term, just to let you know. but yeah, there's nothing wrong with having an influx of people fishing and people hunting. There's nothing wrong with it, because the governments mm-hmm. are gonna control so that we don't eliminate a resource. So yeah. It's good. So let all these new people come in. Let them come in. Let's embrace them. Let's try and teach them the some etiquette, and then everybody go back to normal. And that includes all the businesses and all the restaurants and hotels and gas stations that are in these towns that had a bad 2 years, and now they can start getting back to normal.
And, yeah. And it might, this influx of new people might also open their eyes to, like, it's not like we're just walking into the bush, shooting a deer and carrying it out, or going into yeah. the marsh, shooting a limit of ducks every day and coming out. Like, you put in a lot of time and hard work to enjoy this hobby, right? Like, it's something that maybe they'll see and they'll be like, oh, and they'll appreciate it more. And then they'll go to the guides and have those good times with the guides that put in all that work too. So,
but yeah.
Yeah. And I think I think people forget too, that hunters are some of the biggest advocates of conservation.
Yeah.
You know, the health of the animals. Yeah. They're like, you know, it's funny, cause I had this conversation at work and somebody was talking to me about that's hilarious. Like, I had one of the ladies at work, and she, like, found out that, like, you know, that I'm a deer hunter. And she's like, what? She's like, oh, I thought you were cool. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, and she's like, deer are so, you know, pretty and so cute. I'm like, well, hunters, like, I mean, we think they're magnificent animals. And it's, you know, I mean, if there's one thing as a hunter, it's like you'll sit in the woods and you see a lot of wildlife. Like, one of the things that happened for me from deer hunting is, I guess I'm a bird watcher now. Like, I mean, I know it sounds funny because but I'm right. Right. I mean, like,
yeah.
So you're sitting out there in the woods and you're like, holy cow, like, I've never seen a bird like that. And then, like, you know, all these different colored finches that just come out of nowhere. And, you know, and you just have this appreciation. You got birds flying into the blind and just chilling with you before they realize, like, oh, that camouflage thing has eyes. And then they, like, you know, cruise out. But I mean, I don't know what the point I'm trying to make is that people think that you're just going out there and you're doing, like, one thing, but there's so much more that goes into it. And then there's a side of, you know, the conservancy of, you know, helping, you know, the future, you know, of the sport and this way of life to continue, you know, within, you know, the regulations, of course, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, but I mean, but supporting it, you know, and then, like, people just kind of forget that. They just think you're out there to kill something. And you're going to take great pride in that. And then that's all it is. It's like, well, okay. You know, I mean, as a matter of fact, I just quartered out my first deer this year, you know, I mean, but there was so much more of an appreciation with, you know, taking the animal, quartering it out, and then also, you know, preparing the meat and then putting it in the freezer. You know, there's so much more that goes into that, you know, and that's going to be, you know, and everybody in the house, you know, likes to eat it. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, there's just so much more that goes into it. And people just kind of miss that part. They just, you know, like, again, they don't care how it gets on their plate.
That's right.
They just want to see it on their plate. They don't want to see anything else.
And it's kind of eye-opening, too, to, like, get up early in the morning and you go out, you know, 5 a.m., you're in the turkey woods and you hear that thunder gobble going on for the first time. Or you're in the marsh hunting ducks and you hear the beaver's tail slap because it's trying to warn all the other animals about someone's in here that shouldn't be in here. You know, like, all these things that you see and hear and experience are just – yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's
Brian touched on it when he was talking about you know, getting into the blind and the things that you see and stuff. And and he had said you get to watch the world wake up, and you know, and you do. You watch the world wake up, and And I know, Jay, you had said hunters are some of the biggest conservationists that are out there. But hunters are also the same people that are into the town that are saying, you know what, this time last year, and this is the case here in Canada, this time last year, we had snow on the ground. Or I haven't seen wind like this time of year. Like the hunters know the weather patterns. They know what's happening all around them. They'll tell you if the grass is turning brown earlier than it did last year. There's so much that shooting an animal harvesting that animal and bringing it home, that's the end product. There is so much on the front end of that. We as hunters and fishermen and that's the end product. That's the prize. But there's so much that we appreciate and work to get to that point.
Oh, sure. You know, and people think that you wouldn't, you know, like to see one of these animals right beside you and like be able to just admire it. You know what I mean? Because it truly is. I mean, all these animals are just magnificent in their own way, but you know, let's be real. I mean, they're food, right? I mean, and we help manage that population.
I don't know about down your way, but we've certainly seen it here in Ontario, especially. We've seen a drastic increase in two demographics. One is the young professional who now they want to get out and hunt and they want to harvest their own food because they want to be able to say, I know where my food's coming from.
Yep.
It's not getting pumped full of steroids. It's not coming from, you know, whatever. And the other demographic that we're seeing is female shooters. Our female shooters is skyrocketing right now here in Ontario. It's skyrocketing. They are coming out in huge numbers. And that's, you know, sport shooting, shotgun, rifle, you name it. Women are they're knocking it out of the park right now. It's absolutely crazy here.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of young people. I mean, even my youngest son, you know, he's 17 and he's joining too. He just got his tags and everything. I mean, he did the hunter safety.
Wants to shoot a crossbow.
Yeah.
It's like cheating.
Brian's got a thing with crossbows.
It's cheating.
Has he gone out yet?
Might as well strap a rifle to his arm.
You know what's funny? I know, dude. It's like you're going to have that argument with. Like, there's two different sides of that.
Just wait till I see that young man.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Dude, when I told him I got a crossbow, he's like, what? Yeah. I mean, I love using my bow, but I'm like, crossbows, I've always, ever since I was a kid, I had an infatuation with them, and I finally got one. I'm like, this is cool. And then I showed it to my kid, and then he's like, this is awesome. You know, and I'm like, uh-oh.
You know what? I know I joke about it, but at the same time, man, I'm so proud of him that he took a liking to it and he wants to get out there and do it. Like, that's so cool to me. Like, you know, like my son, I took him out for, you know, youth shotgun season down here once or twice, you know, and it just wasn't his thing. And I'm not going to pressure him into that. But it's cool to see the young kids like still being inspired and wanting to get out in the woods, you know, whether it's because he wants to spend more time with you or if he wants to just get out there and experience it, man. It's just a cool thing to see the young kids, man. Like, I'd much rather take a kid hunting than shoot a 180-inch deer myself.
Sure.
Or shoot a limited greenheads, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'd much rather see that kid, you know, shoot a wood duck, you know? Like, that's just cool. If you can do that, man, that's what it's all about. Like, just carrying on those traditions, I think.
Well, that's Dave's thing. That's Dave's thing.
My kids, I take out as many kids as I can. My two kids... My son's now 15. He's been hunting for 3 years now. My daughter, she's just turned, like, she's 12, almost 13. So this was her first season hunting.
And she's probably a better shooter than you too, right?
Oh, she shot her first turkey, no problem.
No kidding.
That's
awesome.
But like my daughter, I've been taking her out since she was 8, and she'd come out and she'd sit in the blind. Well, I'd set up a blind and I'd set up a nice little chair for her. And she's a little small girl, so she'd sit in the chair and fall asleep. And all the, I'd have the turkeys working and I'd wake her up and she'd, oh, there's birds coming in. They'd come in. I'd shoot. She thinks hunting's like 5 minutes long. And every time I take her out, meanwhile, my son, his first bird, we were out there for 10 days straight before, like, he was seeing his first birds and it's like, oh man. And hunting sucks. And we just sit here bored. And it's like, they got two totally different experiences. Right.
So sure. It's sure.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, in today's day and age, right, you got to tear them away from the electronics and everything else. Cause I mean, yeah, I don't know. Well, in my area, like, everything's like inside, you know, you know, I mean, out by you, it's a little different, right? You know, sure, half and half. It's a little more outside, inside, you know, it, like, cause of the, you know, the, where you're located, it's going to affect how you are, but, or like what you do in life. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, my kid just, he, you know, he really liked the bows. And then I handed down my, you know, a nice Matthew switchback to him when I upgraded. So, I mean, he's, you know, he's got like a flagship bow. So he's like, oh, cool. So he starts doing that. And then, you know, he's all into it, man. I mean, he's taking the time to do the hunter safety. And, you know, we actually just got his tags. We're going on Monday for the first time.
Awesome.
That'll be awesome.
See, here in Ontario, you have to be 12 years old to start. Mm-hmm. And then when you're 12, you have to have a mentor with you. And that mentor, you're sharing a gun so that the kid obviously gets the gun, right? And they get to do the harvest. Well, then now when they turn 15, that's when you can actually start, the two of you. It's a little bit of paperwork, but the two of you can now hunt together. And so this is the first year that my son and I get to bow shoot. So it's, you know,
it's cool.
And now as soon as his friends are 15, they're all coming out with us now. And it's a lot of people for one kayak. That's for sure.
You know what that means? Yeah. He gets to sit in the front and you get to paddle. He's just going to jump shoot some birds, man. Yeah.
Well, that's my next thing that I've got to do, is I've got to experience this that Dave does, this guy, because I'm a mud motor, big duck.
I'm telling you, man, kind of guy. It's going to change you. Like, you know, Brad and I had that conversation too, because he's waiting on his new unlimited. And, you know, so we've been duck hunting out of the boat a bit. And he's like, man, it's so nice being able to tuck that kayak in wherever you want, where the big boats can't get. And that's obviously where the ducks want to go, you know, and it just, your hide is so much easier and better. Like, you're going to love it, dude. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Can't wait.
So I'll hunt the same two areas. And if I take my boat out and I have to go to a boat launch, I'm pretty much an hour earlier that I have to go, because you got to drive a little bit further, launch the boat, get everyone in it, put everything, have the motor running, and then drive the boat all the way to where we're hunting. But with the kayak, it's like, how close can you launch your kayak to where you want to hunt legally? You know, and that's the biggest advantage I find, is just,
sure,
I can wake up a little bit later and and like, it's not like you're sitting on whatever crappy chair you have in a mud boat. Like, you're lounging back and you're sitting there and just your kayak's rocking, and it's nice. So,
heck yeah, man.
That low silhouette, it must, like, Dave, it must make such a huge difference in trying to hide away.
Yeah, I find I can hide two or three kayaks easier than I can hide my big boat. And when you think about it, like, both my new canoes are, one of them's 12 foot long, one of them's 12 and a half foot long. Like, you're getting into the length of a boat, except the way that you're angling it and you're low profile and you're able to hide them a lot better. And whereas the big boat, like, you're another 2 or 3 feet up out of the water. And now, like, with the kayaks, you're laying down so low that the little bit of brush grass that's all around is just enough to cover your back end. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
in that, when you're in the mud boat, it's way up there and you're, so I have to do it both ways. Like, if I'm taking a whole bunch of people out, I got to take the boat, but as much as I can, I like to take those kayaks and just hide. And yeah.
Yeah, it makes that hide so much easier, dude. It's such a difference. Such a difference. Yeah. Synthetic and grass for the wind, bro.
I've never even heard of it. And then there's two or three guys that I look to all the time, like, hey, what do you guys think? And I messaged them right after that the new canoe episode that you did.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, do you use raffia or whatever? And well, I messaged them. I'm like, have you guys even heard of synthetic grass? Like, I thought you were joking about this thing. And and then when you posted the website, I'm like, I guess I'm ordering some of this now for the next
That's all it took.
Yeah.
No, so. That's awesome, man. Well, we're winding down, man. We're a little over an hour. We'll do like you guys do, man. Jay and I will give our final thoughts, and then we'll give you guys the final word, man. Just appreciate you guys taking the time out tonight and, you know, sitting down, having some good, hearty conversations. I love what you guys are doing with the podcast, man. It's super cool. I enjoyed being a guest, but I've been listening as well. So I'm enjoying it. I'm a newer waterfowl hunter. I always take something away from it, man. So it's super cool. For those of you guys out there listening, definitely give these guys a follow if you're even slightly interested in waterfowl hunting. You guys have a lot of good, funny conversations, but also serious, important ones too. So appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool talking to you guys, man. You know, I learned some stuff, realized some stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
like you need to get out and shoot a duck, bro.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, like I said, when I think of the blown chances, I'm like, the rookie stuff. You go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Like I said to you before we started recording, when you shoot that first one, say goodbye to your pocketbook.
I know.
It's done, buddy. It's all over.
Oh yeah.
It's funny too, because with all that prep from like doing our skeet shooting and everything, you're like, man, I know I could definitely get in there. It's just, you know, but you also got to create those chances, right? You know, it's, you know, put in the time and get out there and do it. Find yourself a good mentor, you know. If you can, if you can't, study up, listen to people like podcasts like you, listen to like Brad, you know, on our side, you know, try to put the pieces together, know your laws, you know, don't get yourself in trouble, you know, just make sure you're doing everything you're supposed to do, and then you should go out there and have a good time. And I think the thing you got to realize too is that, you know, probably your first year, maybe even your second, you may not be like your best years of hunting, you know. You're out there really learning. Like, again, like we talked about, you're out there watching a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there, you're observing, you're getting used, you know, kind of like you said, when the first time you went out, you were like, I don't want to shoot the wrong bird. I'm just going to sit back and like, if it happens, it happens, you know, if it doesn't, you know? So, I mean, I think that's a part of it too. I mean, you can't just expect to go out, you know, and make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, put in the time and it'll happen.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And when you're out there, like you're going to have 20 or 30 days where it's like, you know, you're waiting all day long. Like it's taking you 3 or 4 hours to get a few flocks in. And then you'll get that one day where the birds are just, it's the perfect weather conditions. You've got that north wind and the sky's right. And birds are just coming in left and right and you reload. And it's those days, it just puts a huge smile on your face after. And you're like, this is what those other 20 days were for. Right. And
So
keep doing it, keep going out and you'll get that one day and you'll just love it. So.
Absolutely. Damien, final thoughts, brother.
I can't thank you guys enough for asking us to come on. Like this, it really is huge for us because, and Brian, you've listened to the show. We do not pretend to be experts of anything. We are just a bunch of dudes that just love one another's company. Right. So, for you to reach out and ask us to come on, buddy, it means the world to us. I can't thank you enough. And this has been a lot of fun. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Man. Anytime, brother. Anytime. Mr. Palmer.
Yeah, buddy. Again, this has been great. Keep in touch. Hopefully we get to do that new canoe hunt together sometime.
Yeah.
It's been good. It's kind of like going to be weird though, because I guarantee you as soon as we turn this off, Damien's going to be messaging me like, how do we make ours look like theirs did and get Facebook on it and all that stuff? And it's like, this is awesome. You guys are, this is a top notch show, buddy.
I didn't even break it out because I was saving it, but now you brought it up. I want your intro. Dave.
Hey.
Yeah,
buddy, we need this. We need an intro like
that. I got a guy. I got a guy. Shout out to our good friend John Rapp. He made the video work for us, but and then we just did the voiceover and added the music. But we can help you guys out. We'll talk after this ends for sure. We'll get you guys squared away for sure.
You're not talking to me. I am technologically dumb. You're going to be talking to Dave.
That's the thing too. Like the software we use, it's very technologically dumb. User friendly.
Say that word again.
Technologically dumb, user friendly.
That's a lot of syllables.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you guys. Definitely everybody listening at home. If you got into the show late, you could always go back and watch on Facebook, YouTube. It'll get uploaded to the podcast platforms tonight. If you guys are listening on the podcast platforms, thank you as always. What was I going to say? Oh, we will catch you guys next week. You're gone next week, right?
Yeah, I'll be in Tennessee. Yep.
Yeah, I'll be in Tennessee.
Yep. That's right. That's where I'll be driving to Tennessee.
Tennessee. So we'll have an interesting episode next week. I got an idea. I got to run it by the rest of the crew, but we might have a few of the other Paddle and Finn hosts and have a roundtable discussion on I know Jimmy and Drew mentioned it in their episode that aired yesterday, but there was an interesting blog post about like the state of kayak fishing tournaments, stuff like that. So we may dive into that a little bit. It was there was a lot of stuff in there I agreed with, some I didn't, but it pointed out a lot of valid points for those anglers that are trying to make that next step and make this kayak fishing professional thing work and all that stuff. So we'll probably have that for you guys next week. As always, boys and girls, tight lines, smooth paddle. Peace.